For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey guys, Bill Spadia here. Welcome back to the Speaking Podcast. I want to thank my friends at Flemington Car and Truck Country. My friend Steve Califer runs an outstanding business, and I want to thank them for continuing to sponsor this conversation every single week. This is part of our hashtag Speaking COVID version of the podcast, where we try to bring you the resources that you need as we are still going through, at the time of this recording, day 347 of 15 days to stop the spread. Wow, remember the old days. Joining me today is Eleanor Lechter. She is the executive director of Contact of Mercer. This is a mental health resource organization. Their website is contactofmercer.com. And I thought it'd be great to ask Eleanor.
.org.
Did I get them? I got the website wrong. Boom, right out of the gate. All right, it's contactofmercer.org. That'll certainly be in the post. And if let me say this before we get started, they are available. You can go on the website and get the contact information. If you are struggling with any mental health issues, they are a resource for you. So, Eleanor, let's jump right into it. As I said, as of this recording, day 347, we're fast approaching a year in a lockdown. And I want to ask you first, what is the stress on a person and a family with this isolation? And does it affect people who are older or younger differently?
Well, there's a tremendous amount of stress. And I think it does vary by the age. For young people who talk to us, and most of them are talking to us not through our local hotline, but through the National Suicide Prevention Line, which we also answer. So those young folks are talking about how they really like their family. It's not against their family, but they really want to see somebody else. They want to talk to somebody else. They want to get out. They want to meet people. And here they are day after day, and they're stuck at home. And they're feeling like they're losing part of their life.
What do you say? I mean, there's an old saying, now going back, not just the old days of a year ago, but decades ago, people who talk about suicide are not serious about suicide. And we've since learned that the exact opposite can be true. What are some signs? Let's just talk to parents for a minute. There's just a couple of horrific stories that we've heard of students, high school students, taking their own lives in between classes. I mean, just a horrible, horrible stuff. I can't even imagine the pain and the anguish that some of these parents are going through. And hard to wrap your head around the pain, anguish, and anxiety that these kids who make this irreversible decision. What would you say to parents of, let's say, high school kids, where you kind of feel like, hey, my kid's kind of on their own. They're old enough to make decisions. I can go do my thing and they're going to be fine. What are signs that parents should look for?
Well, I think it's all about listening. It's about listening and hearing. And if your child is sounding depressed, I really don't want to do anything anymore. I don't want to go anywhere. I'm sick of this. I'm tired of that. Take some time and just let them talk. Don't cut them off. And just say, I really am interested. Tell me what's going on. I know that these are hard times. So tell me how you're feeling. And if you can get somebody to actually talk and you listen, which means you don't interrupt, you don't tell them they're crazy, you just let them talk, they can often just feel so much better because they're being heard. They're not being...
Is that how you operate Contact of Mercer? I mean, is that the point,
yes,
to being ear for people?
Absolutely. It's all about hearing what the person is saying, not jumping in. And if you feel like, I've got to find a solution, I've got to figure out what to say. No, you don't. Take a deep breath and just listen. And then the person, after they unburden themselves with all of the things that are going wrong, and this is a really hard time for kids. It absolutely is, because they're really in a kind of a grief that the rest of us really have no idea of, because when we were that age, we were certainly not restricted. You know, we could go to school, we could go out, we could meet friends, we could do all of those things. These kids can't. And so there's a lot of loss for kids, and just listen to it and then see what you can do to help. But the first thing is listen, 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 even if they're saying it over and over.
How does it work when someone calls the hotline, and is there a specific number? I mean, there's the National Suicide Hotline. Is there a specific number in New Jersey that people can call if they need someone to talk to?
Well, it's the same number, which is 1-800-273-8255. And there's also a crisis chat part of that. So you can either talk, and for a lot of young people, talking is very hard. Mm-hmm. They're not accustomed to it. They're really much more accustomed to either texting or chatting. And so what we have found is many of our younger people are chatting or texting, and they certainly are welcome to call, but usually kids don't want to talk.
Do you have the resources to chat with people email chat Snapchat or text?
Well, we don't do Snapchat.
No Snapchat at Contact with Mercer?
We don't do that. No, but we can chat, and it's all through the National Suicide Prevention Line that they have a chat program. So we have volunteers, and a lot of our volunteers are very young. They're college students. Mm-hmm. So we have students from Princeton. We have students from TCNJ. We have volunteers from the community. And by the way, that's really what we do. We train volunteers how to listen, how to help, what kinds of resources.
So who are you looking for? Who are you looking for as far as a resource there? What do you look for in an interview? If people who are listening to this podcast, and we'll read what I've posted on the website, nj1015.com/BillSpadia, I will post all the numbers and the resources. And the question is, someone's thinking, you know, I'm a good listener. What do you look for?
If you're a good listener, that's great. We want you. But we also require that you take our 40-hour training program.
Okay.
And we will.
What does that entail?
Well, that's 10 weeks of basically 3 hours a night. We talk about all of the different mental health issues. We have outside speakers, and then we do practice. So it's practice, practice, practice on simulated calls. And we'll be starting another training course in September. So if anyone is interested, they can go to our website and look up training, and we'll get back to them.
So it's 40 hours over 10 weeks, so 4 hours a week, one night?
Well, we add, in addition to the 10 weeks, we do apprenticeships.
And oh, I see. So they do 3 hours a week. So it's one night a week.
One night a week, yeah. And then after that.
So what? Tell me, if you can, what would be a typical call? I mean, at what point does someone pick up the phone and call? What would be something that, and how does it resolve? Like, what's the next step? I talk to you for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Sometimes it goes longer. And what happens after that?
Well, we always invite people to call back. Basically, if they're calling and they're, suppose it's somebody like somebody I talked to recently, and I actually spoke to this person on the National Suicide Prevention Line, and he started out saying, I'm not suicidal, I'm not thinking about killing myself, I just am having a problem. So, you know, we talked about it, and essentially his problem was, he was the age of a college student. He was home. He didn't have a job. He didn't have a place to go. And here he was back home into, you know, his childhood bedroom with his parents. And he said, my family's great. It's not about my family, but I want to get out. I want to see people my age. And so essentially after just saying that and allowing him to speak, he felt better for that time. But that doesn't fix, that doesn't fix it forever. But for that time, he felt better because he knew he wasn't crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I kind of reinforced with him, you know, that what he's feeling is a normal feeling. We've never had a situation like this before in our lifetimes where, you know, suddenly the world stopped. And it was very sudden. And so it's really hard for especially for young people, because it's really the time they want to have more independence. And here they are having less independence.
Can you help kids who are younger? I mean, how about middle school? You know, one of the disturbing trends, even pre-lockdown and pre-panic over COVID, there was a disturbing trend of 10, 11, 12-year-olds taking their own lives. I mean, middle school kids, it's hard to wrap my head around that. That was not a thing when I was growing up. Or at least no one talked about it and we didn't know about it. But it seems that they're younger and younger. How young can you handle?
Well, for the people who call us, or they don't really call us on the phone, that we talk to with our crisis chat program, the youngest we've had is probably around 11, but we have a lot of them, 12, 13, 14, 15. And basically it's the same thing. They just want to have an opportunity to talk. And a lot of them are unfortunately being bullied over internet games and internet sources. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard for them to get some positive feedback. And so what we try to do is just let them talk, reinforce the good things that they're thinking about doing, and just trying to offer resources.
How do you handle it if you encounter an abusive situation where a kid calls in there? I mean, I'm sure that's happened. What's the protocol for that?
Well, if a child calls and says that they're being abused, well, then we talk to them further. And if it's a serious abuse situation, we will reach out for additional help with that particular call or chat.
Social services, law enforcement, combination.
Yeah. I mean, we also handle calls. They're really from calls and chats from across the country. And it depends on the state. It depends on,
So just because you're a contact of Mercer, if you're listening to this and you live in Bergen County or across the river in Pennsylvania, the hotline's available. You are a center that can handle it. But how many people do you have staffing your call center?
Well, we basically have one person on the phones at a time. But we have a pool of about 200 people in our training. Yeah.
In a center, or do you sign up to be a volunteer and the call comes to my cell phone while I'm on duty?
Well, so here's the story with that. We actually have three different places where we take calls, but all of them were shut down in the pandemic when it started last March. So at this point, we have our volunteers are scattered across the country. Wow. Many of them are college students, and they take these calls on their own cell phones. So it's we've had to kind of make things up as we've gone along. How are we going to do this? I mean, we were based in a certain location, which we do keep confidential, but we were based there, and then suddenly we were not based there anymore. So
yeah.
So it's,
I'm glad I asked that, because that's something that, you know, with all this remote stuff, I must imagine there's some technology that the cell phone number of the person answering it doesn't get shared.
It's a confidential service. So that even if we were to see their telephone number, I mean, we don't call people back.
I mean, the volunteers shouldn't worry that their cell phone gets out.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah.
Right.
Because
so let
we don't
me ask
want
you,
people to just calling our volunteers.
Eleanor, do you find that people who volunteer have something relatable that happened in their life? Either they overcame something or have a friend or relative who suffered. Do you find there's a personal drive for the people that volunteer to help?
Oh, absolutely. There are people that feel like, you know, I've been through this, or people that have been touched by suicide in their family, mm-hmm. and they, you know, they deal with that, and then they feel like, I want to give back. I don't want somebody else to go through this. So absolutely. And it's really a wonderful way for people to help others in a very structured way for a certain time period of a couple of hours. And then there's nothing beyond that. So we're not asking people to take on somebody else's issues or somebody else's problems. We're asking them to do the best they can when they talk to someone. And then that's their commitment.
Now, how does it work? So you got, let's say you've got a Jersey college kid, heads out to California for college, stays on as a volunteer, signs up and gets a call. Is there any reporting back to authorities at your organization? Like, hey, I just had this call and this is how I've offered to follow up and help. Like, what's the follow up?
Well, so most of our people now are remote. And so your question is very apropos to the situation. So basically, most of the calls are strictly listening and helping while you're on the phone. Then we, you know, obviously everybody has computers and so forth. So we will look up referrals. If somebody calls from another state, we'll look up a referral in that state. And we do keep track of where we refer people, but we don't follow up on them. It's not like like having your own personal counselor where that person is going to follow you. We're sort of like first responder type people.
First responders of mental health. Yeah, that's a great way to characterize it.
That's really what it is.
Are you concerned about the future? I mean, I have to believe you're busier now than you were before this lockdown. What are your concerns going forward?
Well, for us, we're volunteer service, and we're always concerned, are we going to get enough volunteers? However, I will say that people are responding. I mean, people really do want to help. Not everybody, but a lot of people want to help. And they're willing, especially, I believe, during a pandemic when they're home anyway, they really have more time than when they're up and out and about and so forth. So I'm not really a worrier. I mean, I'm hoping for the future. I'm hoping we can fund our program for the future.
And How do you get funded? Is it government? Is it private?
We're a private nonprofit. We get some funding from Mercer County. It does not cover our program. And then we do an annual gala, which you'll have to come to our annual gala.
I would love to. Okay. Eleanor, I want to help you as much as possible. I think such a tremendous resource. I had not touched personally, but in our school system, my kids went through the Princeton Public School System, mm-hmm. and always struck me there was a memorial at the middle school for a young kid who took their own life. And I thought, that just shouldn't be. That's just so horrific to me to think of a kid that hasn't even started life. My God, middle school, I can't remember middle school, right? Yeah. And your perspective is so limited at that point. You have no idea all the good things that could be on the other side. And when I heard about what you were all doing, and I thought, this madness of the lockdown has got to end soon. People are, you know, we've crossed the line into where it was to protect public health, and now you've gone into such severe damage of public health when it comes to our mental health. And I think too often mental health gets left in the dust because you can't see it. It's hard to quantify it. When someone is sick, you can give them medicine. When someone is suffering mentally, many people who are suffering mentally are good fakers and liars, and they deceive themselves sometimes and they don't realize. And then boom, you hit a wall. So this is something I want to continue working with you and helping you, and
I'd be happy.
Be part of the gala and help you raise some money. I want to.
Yeah, I would be very happy about that. And we get donations, and so we're starting this program for the future, called Listening for Tomorrow. So, LIFT, not car rides for tomorrow, but Listening for Tomorrow.
Listening for Tomorrow. Yeah. Well, Eleanor, that's all the time I have today, but it was great talking to you. Thank you for your passion for this important cause and your energy and your the thought process that goes behind it. And thanks for sharing some of the inside workings. I'm hoping from this, people who need help will call the suicide prevention hotline. If they are thinking about volunteering, I'm sure you could use 100 more volunteers in the next couple of weeks. Just go to contactofmercer.org.
Yeah.
Got it.
Thank you so much, and we'll keep in touch.
We'll be in touch for sure. You take care, Eleanor. Okay, thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.